जब से तुमसे प्रीत लगी है। हे ब्रह्मा बाबा पावन ब्रह्मा बाबा, मन में अद्भुत शक्ति जगी है, शक्ति जगी है।
शांति। The idea of these 10 steps of Brahma Baba, of course, with 18th January coming up, I think we all are here with the aim of becoming Bap Saman, becoming like Baba. But you may remember this little book. This is where it comes from. This little book, I think it was a gift, maybe last 18th January or Shivratri. So, because we don't have 10 days, we'll do 2 steps a day and see if we cover them all. But the very first step in here is of being generous, generous-hearted. And of course, generous means to have a big heart. But when I was looking up, because I like to know where these words come from, because it's the same like prefix gen, as gentle, as genre, as, you know, and it actually, genteel, it's like very royal. So it actually comes from nobility, it comes from royalty. So only people from a royal family would be described as generous. But if we think back, it, I think, probably was in the hands of the rulers to have most of the resources and to be generous enough to distribute them as they were needed. But it was apparently in about the 16th century that it started to become a word that was used generally. But still, when I think of people who are generous, and especially I'm thinking of the centers in India I go to, when the centers are very generous, it always feels very royal. And in India, at least, to me, it's very connected with this quality of bhavana, as I mentioned the other day. Bhavana means, it's got a lot of different meanings, actually, very different. It means loving feelings, it means sometimes emotions. It's in Buddhism, it's a word for meditation, which is interesting. But the other day I was sharing what Dadi said about bhavana, because it's so simple and clear. And she said, when someone comes to your house, you might offer them a glass of water. But with bhavana, you would think, what temperature of water, which glass should I use? And maybe put it on a tray, put a little napkin. So in a way, this is being generous. It's not just giving a glass of water without feelings, but to be generous is to feel whatever you can in that giving. And this is what I think, you know, I've been living in India for, this is my 4th year now, and I travel around to all the centers, and there's so much generosity that it's ridiculous. In one center, and in fact often it's the ones that are not so wealthy that are more generous. I think in one center in Ferozabad, the gifts that I accumulated was about, it must have been like more than this wide and this high. And I kept telling them, I can only carry 15 kilo. And then they said, oh, we'll bring it to Mount Abu for you. You know, so it's not only the giving, but even being willing to go to all the trouble to carry it and deliver it and all of those things. But there's just such a generosity. And it is very much the feeling of royalty when there's this kind of giving. But on the other hand, we don't have to give a lot. To give what is appropriate or what is needed at the time, to give something very useful, can also be generous. And I remember going to one center in Australia where someone gave me 3 or 4 very little things that were so useful. But the generosity that she had to have thought beforehand what to give. You know, they were very small travel things and very useful. But she must have been looking for a while, because you wouldn't just go and pick up a few of those things. So, you know, it doesn't mean to give a lot, but it's this whole spirit of sharing and caring and giving. But of course, the question often is how to. And that's what this little book has got, because they're little excerpts from Mulis. And what one thing Baba's saying is, you know, the way that we interpret generosity in the spiritual sense is very different to the world. So to be generous is, Baba says, to accommodate others' weaknesses. That to be generous, we need to have the power to accommodate, the power to tolerate. And that is, again, having a big heart and, you know, like Kalvinda was saying yesterday, giving space, you know, listening. So generosity can be shared in a lot of different ways, but giving, you know, people space, like, you know, one definition probably for generosity is to give something that brings benefit. Because also giving can be wasteful. There's a very fine line between being generous and being wasteful. Like people putting too much food on your plate that you can't eat. It could be seen as generous. They probably do it with a generous heart. But it becomes wasteful. So there's a fine line in there. And so when we think of giving, it's also to be, you know, appropriate. So when there's this generosity where we give for benefit, for example, if someone's angry, the way I can bring benefit is to help to reduce the pain that they're experiencing. And so if someone's angry and I say or do things to make them more angry, then it's not benefiting at all. So to be generous is to accommodate, to tolerate, to say you're sorry, even if it's not your fault. That often works very well, just to say you're sorry, and just with the aim of bringing benefit and bringing that calmness. But sometimes also there are times when we don't know why, but we don't feel like giving. And that's also a very interesting thing to watch, because of course some people will be very good at taking, and there can be manipulation in taking. And so we need to be aware of that too, like the poor me. You know, some people are very good at the poor me. And they will get you to give and give because they are a poor me. And I know when I had that experience once of thinking, why don't I want to give to this person? Normally I'm a giving person, but I don't want to. And I recognized that that person was doing a poor me. You know, and it's a manipulation, because they're trying to make you feel guilty, you know, to feel sorry for them. So you're not giving in a very clean space, because that's also one of the things that it says in here, is to have a clean and pure heart. So giving needs to be very clean. And so if there's some kind of manipulation, it's not clean, and you're actually not benefiting that person. You're just enabling that kind of sanskar. You're not helping them by giving. It's not being generous. It's actually being, it's not bringing benefit. So that word is the word behind generosity, but there's a few of these. One is poor me. The other is intimidate, where people threaten you, so that you give. And that's often, again, emotional. Like, if you don't give it to me, I won't love you. I mean, children do this. But, you know, people do this generally. They give you the message, sometimes very subtly, that if you don't, then you'll pay for it in some way, a withdrawal of their affection, something like that. So where's the generosity if I'm giving in that kind of a manipulative situation? So there's poor me, there's intimidating, there's interrogating. Because one area of being generous is with information, being open, you know? So this is also an area of generosity, but sometimes people are just interrogating and will use that. And because of that, often people who have been around these kind of interrogating parents especially, they are very aloof. And that's another way that people can get attention from you, by being aloof. They always keep you guessing. You never know what they're doing. They take so much energy because they don't tell you anything. They just keep you hanging in there. And one example of that is in one of the centers I was at, there was a brother, it was a big center, and there was a brother responsible for cooking. But he never used to tell the helpers, I mean, the cooking used to be for 50, 60 people. He never used to tell the helpers what time they should be there to do the chopping. So they used to just kind of hang around, keep coming, looking. They wanted to help. They'd come to do service. But that's kind of being aloof and controlling in another way. So when people are aloof also, sometimes we don't feel generous. And we don't know why, but it's because we're being played with. It's manipulative. They're just keeping you, you know, at their mercy in a way. So you'll waste 1 or 2 hours just waiting. And so there's all these kinds of manipulations that go on that we need to be aware of, because there could be a reason why I'm not feeling generous. When I would normally give, it's good to check, why do I not feel like giving? What's going on? And it could be because there's some game going on there. And so, you know, I need to address that. But also in this area of giving, it says in here also, that's not the one, that's the next one. Oh no, it goes on to that. So it doesn't say so many things in here, but it's a little book. But one of the other aspects of being able to give is to keep a full stock. I mean, how can we give if we're not overflowing? And this also sometimes becomes a problem with the BKs, because we fill so much. Often the BKs can give and give and give. So I know at one point at the UN in New York, we had to make a conscious choice to withdraw some of the cooperation we were giving, because we were sometimes the only ones giving. And I know in an interfaith group that I was coordinating in Hong Kong, it was the same thing. The BKs used to do everything, and the other groups just, they would take a responsibility, but hardly ever deliver. And so we have to think also, as a community, as a center, what is the fair exchange in a way? Because otherwise, you know, we're again not using Baba's time and sometimes the resources in the best way. And again, it's facilitating, it's just enabling those people to keep taking. So there's not really benefit in that. So it's not as straightforward as just giving and giving and giving. We need a lot of wisdom. Like Dadi Janku says in the book on Wings of Soul, that we should really discern as to who we give to. Because, you know, Baba sometimes says in the Muli, no point giving jewels to monkeys. So if we're just giving and giving and the other person doesn't recognize what it is, they're just going to throw it away. And so, you know, being generous is also to keep that word, I think, all the time in mind of benefit. What's the benefit in this? How is there benefit in this? Because that helps us to do that checking, whether it's going into something negative like enabling or into waste. Because there's many areas where, you know, even if somebody wants you to listen to them, when listening, as we were talking about yesterday also, is such a great gift to yourself and also to others. It's a very great gift. But again, is there benefit in this listening? Because sometimes you'll be listening to somebody and they'll be talking the same thing for 10 years. And as long as you give them time, they'll take it. So what's the benefit for that person? It's also enabling. And it's often better to have a two-way conversation and, you know, explore with them what's really going on at that time. And I remember one particular situation in China. It was very soon after the Cultural Revolution, and I was visiting there. And there was a lady I met who had so much sorrow in her face. Her face was just full of sadness. And she was actually someone who was studying fine arts in Paris. And, you know, during that Cultural Revolution, people who were in privileged positions were one of the main targets. And also her husband actually was in the army, you know, that wasn't in favor. And so, you know, she was sent out to the Gobi Desert where she said she was just like, she just lived like an animal. And, you know, this woman who was studying fine arts in Paris, her hands were all, you know, very affected by the life that she had led. But when I was with her, she used to talk about all of this sorrow. And I thought it was, you know, good. You know, to listen, to let her offload. But to be honest, partly there was a benefit in listening. Partly there was also an interest from my side. You know, like, oh, I met somebody who's been through this, you know. That's very impure. To listen, well, I felt anyway, it wasn't a pure listening. It was listening almost like entertainment, you know, that kind of thing. So we have to check always our motivation when we're giving. But the other thing was, after a while, because I used to go there every few months, and, you know, whatever gyan I was sharing with her was really effective, like quite amazing. When I met her the first time, she asked me why she had suffered. And I felt so inadequate because I've had such a comfortable life. But I was just giving all the gyan points, you know, that when we suffer, we settle accounts. When we suffer, you know, we learn a lot, we change. You know, so many, whatever gyan points I could share, I shared with her. But while I was sharing, I was feeling a little uncomfortable because it was just what I considered at that time, just knowledge, not, I always think I should share from my experience. But it was a very good lesson, because when I met her 6 months later, she looked much better, not completely, but at least half of that pain was gone from her face. And she told me, she said, whatever you shared with me last time, it's helped me so much. And she said herself, at least 50% of my sorrow is gone. So that was a very good lesson for me, because I kind of was, it was underlined for me how powerful the knowledge is. It doesn't have to be your experience, but just the knowledge itself is such a power. So just that knowledge itself helped her. But then after, you know, two or three visits, and she was still talking about all of this sorrow, I asked her and I said to her, do you think it's really useful to keep talking about it? I don't mean to be rude and I don't want to not listen to you, but I think it's worth asking whether it's really useful to talk about it. And I said to her, I don't think it is, because I think it's time now to move on, you know, to think of the future and not keep living in the past. And it was also brought on by something that Sister Mohini from New York had said, that in this whole area of karma, when we have a karmic account, like maybe I owe you something, like a debt, some money, and according to the drama, you know, there's a time when I give you that and it should be settled. But then if I keep thinking how I paid that to you and I keep remembering how I gave that to you, it's actually not settled, because every time I think of how I had to give that to you, I suffer it. So the account is not settled, even though it could be settled. And I think we can all see how we do this. And so I mentioned this to her and I said, you know, I think now this account is settled. It's time to leave it behind and move on. So with your agreement, every time you bring up this sorrow, can I change the subject? And she agreed, you know. And so whenever she brought it up, I would just change the subject, bring it around to something of the future, something positive. And the next time I went to see her, which must have been a few months later, so much had changed inside that she had the opportunity to meet her son, who she hadn't seen for something like 20 years, because when her husband was killed, he defected to Taiwan. But, you know, things were changing, so he was able to visit her. But how, when she changed, you know, she brought the future rather than living in the past, and things just got better and better. But it was a very, again, a very good experience of listening, and why we listen, and how, you know, that fine line between being generous in listening and wasting, enabling, and actually not bringing benefit. So when we, you know, keep that word in mind all the time, then I think we can have a basis for understanding what is true generosity. But then it's good for us all to think at this time, we'll have the other step in a minute, but it's good for all of us to think in which areas I could be more generous and what's stopping me from being generous. One more point in this little book was, to be generous, I need to be a soul that has no dependency. So I need to have a right. I need to be a soul that claims a right, like it's like an heir soul. I have a right. I have a right to everything Baba has on offer. But why am I then dependent on someone or something or some facility? And so if I want to be generous, I need to be independent, because often that's when I stop also being generous, when I feel to take. And of course, that's a very common thing in the world, to have that neediness and think of taking. So I need to address that from this Gyan perspective and think of how I can be free of all dependency so that I can then be full. And then I'll be in a position to give rather than thinking of taking. And so maybe just to spend a few minutes reflecting, and if I can see most of you have got notebooks, so maybe just to spend a few minutes reflecting on my generosity and how I could increase it, what's maybe blocking it. So just to spend a few minutes journaling in that, or thinking about it if you don't have a notebook. Then to maybe think of one step you can take to really start removing a block in generosity, or to increase your generosity. No, it's okay, we're just reflecting. Now we're going to go into the second one of sustainer. So the second step is be a sustainer, like Father Brahma. And one of the points it's mentioning here, Father Brahma gave you children, spiritual birth, and also gave you such sustenance that the words "my Baba" emerge from everyone's lips. So what makes us say "my Baba"? It's because we get so much, isn't it? Is that why? And so, in the same way, let there be the feeling of belonging from everyone. And this was especially Daddy Prakash Mani's greatest speciality, one of the greatest specialities. She really gave a feeling of belonging. And I remember the first time I met her in Australia. She was, we had a public program, and she gave everyone key rings as a gift, all the participants who came, and then she was giving the people who were the waiters in the hotel these key rings, and one more came and she had none left. And so I said, take mine, you can, you know, take mine. And he was saying, no, I can't take yours. And this was the first time I met Daddy, and she hit me really hard, you know, but very hard. And she said, it's okay, she's my friend. Just like that. And it was such a powerful impact, because, you know, we think of the daddies as like so big. And to just hit me on the arm like this and just say, it's okay, she's my friend. It just brought me into such a close feeling with her, that she feels like that, that she can just be so natural and easy and not play this role of like a senior sister. And, you know, so Dadiji really had that feeling of belonging because of sustenance. And even here, I mean, it goes quite well with generosity, actually, because when there was a conference here of gurus, they had like, I don't know, something like a lot. They fitted on this stage from one end to the other, because they couldn't put anyone in the second row, right? Because all the gurus believe that they are God. The actual, what do you call that? Protocol of having like 100 gods is quite amazing. And one of them said that he only has his food cooked in pure ghee. And so we had to cook for him in pure ghee, because he only eats food cooked in pure ghee. And so Daddy said, okay, everyone's food will be cooked in pure ghee. This ghee is very expensive compared to oil. I think it's like four times, is it? About four times the price. But this was the generosity. And because of this generosity of Daddy, they were all like bowing at her feet in the end. And they all became so humble because whatever they wanted, she just kept giving and giving. All the time just giving. But that feeling of belonging, you know, it was the both things, generosity, but also the feeling that you are my brother, my brother's soul. And very often if you see these gurus here, usually by the end they'll bring out a rakhi, and whichever daddy it is, they'll tie a rakhi on the guru, because by that stage he feels, I'm your brother. You know, instead of being the guru, he becomes the brother. So when we can give that feeling of belonging, that's a very big thing, that it really brings a great humility and connectedness between both parties. So it says here, give the experience of a relationship. Give the experience of a relationship to whoever comes into contact with you, and then connection with them will be easy. And actually this is still very strong in India, but even generally in Asian culture, usually you will call anyone sister, brother, grandfather, uncle. You know, that's, I don't know about Russia, is it also like that? No. But this was in Asia, it's still like that, that you won't normally think of using someone's name. And even the brother who works for me in the office, he's 22, and we have another sister in Shantivan helping us who must be maybe 28 or something. And he calls her Didi. I said, you also call her Didi, which means elder sister. But so respectful, you know, it's very respectful and very nice to hear him call this quite small sister, Didi. But this is this engenders this kind of feeling. And in one of our programs that we had, the last one we had, I think, well, anyway, one of the programs we had recently, that was what, it is what one of the speakers said. He says, there's something called, oh, now I have to think of that word, social capital. That India is very, very strong on social capital because it's a relationship-based society, you know? And I see that. I see that, you know, and also if you're having trouble with anyone, if you just bring relationship into it, usually you can remove that problem. You know, like once you start relating them to them and really feeling, come on, brother, you know, like if you can bring them into that feeling, they get off their kind of power trip. But this thing of belonging is one of the first things here it says about being a sustainer. And whoever you become an instrument for, bring that soul up with such sustenance that through that love and sustenance, that soul claims a right to the imperishable inheritance. So what Baba's saying is whoever we become an instrument for, we should bring them up in such a way that they really become strong and healthy and powerful. Make that soul so powerful that they experience themselves to be a destroyer of obstacles, healthy and wealthy, and full of all powers. So that's the sign that we've really given sustenance to someone that we've become an instrument for, when we can make them kind of stand on their own feet with Baba. And it says that somewhere here, to be an instrument for them. You know, to be an instrument for them to claim everything from Baba, but not to be the support for them. Again, that becomes a tricky thing because very often people are looking for a support. And so when we give sustenance and we, you know, give generously and we give whatever we can, then it's very common for people to put you on a pedestal. Very dangerous, because sooner or later you're going to fall off that pedestal in their eyes. So that's very dangerous. But also to, you know, want someone to be like their support. And in the BKs previously, things have changed now, but there used to be that very much a culture of the senior sister giving advice and directions and this kind of thing. That is not happening so much anymore because actually the seniors got tired of it because they then get blamed for everything also. Because there's two sides of that, you know. But also I think the culture has changed where, you know, they will more likely now have a conversation with you and get you to make your decision rather than tell you what you should do, which was, I think, more the... Is it? Is that what you're experiencing? Culture has changed and it's more, you know, helping you to make your own decision rather than telling you what to do. But that also is a much healthier, you know, way to be, because actually we are so greatly fortunate to have these seniors, to have such experienced yogis with so much connection with Baba, but also experience of dealing with many, many, many different situations. So it's our great resource to have these seniors. But again, we need to keep our intellect and make our decisions and take their guidance or take their suggestions. Most importantly, I think, is see their point of view. Because when you're in a situation, usually you can only see your own point of view. So when we are able to see things from a bigger perspective, then it's very different. I'll give you one example of that. It was very interesting. This sister, her husband was not so happy that, you know, she was on this path. And so he told her more or less, well, you either follow this path and get out, or you stay with me and the family and give us your full attention, something like that. And I said to her, look, Daddy Janki's coming, so just wait. You talk to her, she'll, you know, give you advice. And that was very interesting, because what Daddy said to her is she should, like, I wasn't in the meeting. She told me later that Daddy said, don't come to the center, don't read the Muli, just give your full attention to your family. And I said to her, really? Are you sure? Did you hear it right? She didn't say, come once a week or something like that. No. She told me not to come anymore and just to give my full attention to the family. So we didn't see her for about 5 or 6 days. But then after 5 or 6 days, she was there in the class. And I said, what are you doing here? Daddy told you not to come. And she said, but I can't stay away. And that's when I saw Daddy's wisdom, you know, because Daddy was making her make her choice. You know, of course, it's her choice. And I had heard previously that very much when she was talking about, you know, the way she used to talk about the Muli, and that it was like, Baba says, and she was doing it like a bit under pressure and feeling that I have to do it because Baba said I have to do it. But, you know, when you've got a family, you have to keep a little balance of how you manage things. You can't just follow everything. I mean, for anyone, it's hard to follow everything, but when you've got a balance of family. But what Daddy had done is really brought her to her own self and her own choices and what she wants, not so much what Baba says she should do. And Daddy completely freed her by telling her, don't come, just go and look after your family. don't even read them all. Completely freed her so that what came was from her heart. You know, so the way, you know, when we have these seniors, they're very clever at the way they can manage and take us forward. And then it's also saying in here that mostly when we are a sustainer, the form of the mother, you know, like Shilu Ben was asking in the class yesterday, if brothers give a lot of sustenance, what do people call you? If you give a lot of care and sustenance in, because a lot of times brothers are running centers, especially in Australia, but still I hear them being called mother. I don't hear them being called father, isn't it? They always say, oh, he's such a good mother. Because, you know, it's kind of just traditionally the role of the mother to give that caring and love and sustenance, whether it's through toli and cooking or through any other means. But, you know, to be the world mother. So that doesn't mean that, you know, if you're in a male body, you can't be a world mother. Because it's more a quality of sustaining and giving. And Baba was saying the other day in the Mooli that when you give a lot, people call you mother. No, he was saying just a few days ago in the Mooli. A mother does not see the defects and weaknesses of her children. She has two special powers, the power to tolerate and the power to accommodate. In order to sustain every soul, use these two powers and there'll definitely be success. So very similar to generosity, but using the power to tolerate and the power to accommodate will help to remove the weaknesses. And then Baba's saying, people who come into contact with you should experience that they have never received such love, nor have they even seen such love. And, you know, being in India around the centers, because the centers are big in India, so I guess I see different things because they're so big. But I think anyone in India who's connected to a center is so fortunate. They get so much. Even one brother was telling me, he was moving from Mumbai to Mount Abu, and his sister was like, oh, okay, when will we see you again? And like so detached, like she didn't really care, you know, his Lockick sister. But the center, they just couldn't let him go. They were saying, what do you mean? You're leaving us. And they just were giving so much love, and they were then saying, how can we help you, you know? And, you know, this kind of sustenance that we get from the centers, usually we don't even get from our own families. And this little brother who's working with me, his mother left the body about 6 months ago. And his family, he, his mother, father and brother, they've all been, you know, really kind of right hands of the center. So not only the mother left, but the grandmother also left. Both of them passed away in the last 6 months. So now they take all their meals at the center. His father and brother take all their meals at the center. And even when the mother was so ill with cancer, she was taking some naturopathic treatment, needed so much attention because you had to boil this thing for 2 hours and this and that. So the center insisted that she stay at the center so that they all could take care of her. This is the kind of love and sustenance and generosity that's prevalent in this culture. I mean, one thing, it's the culture. Second thing is there's hands. I mean, that would quite be very difficult. I know one center tried to really help when one sister was in the final stages of cancer, and, you know, she was accommodated at one of the retreat centers, but it was so difficult for some of the people there. It really stretched them because they didn't have the the resources, the human resources to manage. So, you know, one is the culture, two is that there are more people around to help. But even if we can't do it in our centers, I'm not saying we should do these things in our centers, but the spirit of that upliftment, that sustenance, that generosity, and that we can all have. And it will come through our feelings, it'll come through our intention. And people understand when we can't physically do what we'd like to do. People understand. And true spiritual sustenance is to continue. True spiritual sustenance is to continue to receive blessings from everyone and give blessings to everyone. That's a very nice definition of true spiritual sustenance, is to continue to receive and to give blessings. And of course, when we think about the image of the sustainer, it's Vishnu, Brahma Vishnu, and Shankar, Brahma the creator, Vishnu the sustainer. So in that, we also see to be a sustainer, we need to be very balanced, because we need to be able to first sustain ourselves. And many BKs can't even do that. You know, I know one sister who just would never give herself enough sleep. So she was always sleeping all the time, wherever she was. She was just too hard on herself. You know, she would just not really, I think, take care of herself and give herself the sustenance that she needed. So unless we're able to give ourselves the sustenance we need, that we can stay healthy, wealthy and happy, then how are we going to be a master bestower of that sustenance to be able to help others? Because we don't even know how to do it. And so Vishnu is a very good symbol of those four, the balance of the four arms, the male, female, the, you know, four subjects, keeping all of them in balance. So if we think about sustenance, we can also, you know, think how to be like Vishnu, how to keep all those four. You know, Baba says Brahmins can't hold these four decorations because we drop them. And sometimes we're very good at one, not very good at another. But that's a very good symbol of being in complete balance. And I was mentioning the other day that sometimes people think perfection is up there and they make so much hard effort, like this sister that didn't sleep enough because she was too busy making effort and trying to become perfect and being good and all of that. So she was trying to rise up. But balance is perfection. So you'll only reach perfection when you can be balanced in everything, not when you can go to extremes. Anyone can go to extremes, actually. It's not that difficult, is it? Is it? We can do almost anything if we want, but to keep a balance is very difficult. And so that's the art of life. And that's the art of perfection, to be balanced. I know one sister, what problem did she have? She had some problem. She went to so many specialists. And I think over 2 years she was taking this help and this treatment and going for tests. And then she met a naturopath and he said, all you need to do is sleep, eat, and breathe. And I don't know how he got through to her, but she started to, he told her she had to sleep every night 9 o'clock, because that's when you get the quality sleep. And you'll be surprised, Nizarbai, I think many of you know him from the Future of Power, he's the chairman of 54 companies. You can imagine how busy he is, as well as doing this project as well. He goes to bed 9 o'clock at night, every day, as much as possible, you know, when he's not traveling. But what a great discipline. I tell all the
big, big people that, because they can't believe it, you know, that somebody's so busy. He said, otherwise I can't do Amrit Vela and I can't, you know, sustain myself throughout the day when I'm so busy. How I could sleep late and then get up at Amrit Vela and work all day, it's not possible. But what a great discipline to sleep at 9 o'clock, isn't it? It's not easy. Sometimes it's not even possible, but mostly if you, if you manage your life and you put your priorities, his priority is Amrit Vela. So if it's a priority, you just do it. You just manage your life around it. And so this is how we all need to find that balance. But she was sleeping at 9 o'clock. She was chewing. I think it wasn't eating, it was chewing. Sleep, chew. Because often we just, you know, we're in such a hurry and we're so unconscious when we're eating that we just, you know, don't give that kind of digestive awareness to what we're doing. And breathe. Yeah, just breathing. Most of us don't breathe properly. But she got well. From these three things, she got well. That problem went away. Just chew, sleep and breathe. So, you know, often we neglect just the basic things for ourselves because we get so out of balance and we don't give importance to the things that we need to give importance to. So again, we just have 5 minutes before meditation. So maybe you want to write down how you could be a sustainer. Oh, one more point that it said in here about uplift. No, that's the next one, upliftment. That's the third step. That's tomorrow. Better not give you that. Okay, so just think what this means to you, sustenance, and how you can be a master sustainer to sustain others without being a support, without making them dependent on you. Giving a sense of belonging. Giving such love that they've never seen before. And because we're going to be going through these three steps, there's a suggestion that we take 2 steps a day, but really think how to apply it, not just listen, but what can I do to walk in these footsteps of Brahma Baba? And look at this institution, this organization that he has set up. All of the things that we see now. You know, he used to give gifts to 200, 300, and now 25,000 get a gift. Can you imagine? They're still keeping that same system that he has set up. And, you know, all the things that the generosity that Baba, you know, started from the very beginning is being upheld. And I think that I feel really grateful to our seniors for really keeping the culture that was there at the beginning, even though there's been so much expansion. You know, it's just amazing how this organization runs. No one can believe it, how this organization runs. 25,000 people coming, no one spent paying any money for anything. It all just goes in the box and the next 25,000 come, you know, but it's a very... And people, I'm meeting all these VIPs and they're saying things like that. They're saying, we're watching the Brahma Kumaris. They don't take anything. And, you know, they're really like just watching mostly, a lot of them. Because a lot of the ones I meet, they've never been in contact, they've never come. So, but a lot of them are saying, we've been watching and we like it and... compared to others, you know, because now if you want to get a blessing from a guru, it costs like 1 lakh rupee to get a touched on the head is one price, feet is, and things like this are happening now in India. So, you know, to keep this purity and generosity and free, you know, kind of to keep everything in its pure essence, that's our job also to uphold that until the end. we also need to support that. Good, so now we have half an hour meditation, and we can bring Brahma Baba's life experience and think about what he has set up that we are now following in the footsteps of. Om Shanti.